Blog Talk Radio.
This is the UR Tennis Network. We are the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate tennis enthusiasts who promote our sport relentlessly. We strive continuously to bring news and information for players, parents, coaches, officials, businesses, and anyone else who loves tennis. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis may not be interested in them.
Blog Talk Radio.
UR Tennis is an advocacy group for underrepresented tennis participants. These participants would include players, parents, coaches, and the learners of all racial minorities, all social class minorities, all sexual minorities, all age-related minorities, and anyone who seems to have been forgotten. Our mission is to act as the voice for tennis. We are striving to bring forth programs, contests, issues, news, education, and philanthropy that will benefit all in tennis. We are seeking active participation from populations that believe they have an interest in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We want to expand our outreach royally, regionally, nationally, and worldly. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to continuously be talked about, and we will pursue this idea relentlessly.
Welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on UR Tennis. I am Lisa Stone, your host, and we are actually pre-recording a show today that will be airing on Christmas Eve, December 24th. So we will not have any callers today, but rather just a full hour of chatting and conversation about the roles of tennis parents today. And I'm really pleased to welcome our guest today. She is a former junior player, a former collegiate player, a former professional player, and a current tennis parent. And as soon as we get back from commercial, I will bring Louise Allen on the line. But first, a quick break for some support from our sponsor.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Welcome back to the Parenting Aces radio show. I'm your host, Lisa Stone. And as I mentioned, we are pre-recording this show to air on Christmas Eve, so I'd like to wish all of our listeners a very happy holiday season. Also, since the show is pre-recorded, we won't be able to take callers today. But if you do have questions or comments for our guest, Louise Allen, you can always email them to me at fitmom@bellsouth.net, and that address is on the parentingaces.com website. So I'm just so excited to welcome Louise to the show. Louise, are you on the air?
I am. I'm here.
All right. Before we get going, I want to just say to our listeners that this is the first time I've pre-recorded a show, so if we have any technical glitches, please bear with me. We're doing our best here, but Louise has so graciously given us an hour of her very busy time to share her experiences as both a former player, I'm assuming a current player, but most importantly a current tennis parent. And Louise, before we jump in, I would love for you to just kind of give us a down and dirty background of where you came from in the tennis world.
Sure. So I grew up actually in North Carolina, and so very familiar with the Southern tennis, all the Southern tennis rounds of all the tournaments and all of that. So I did junior tennis there. I was very fortunate. Later in my junior tennis career, I did pretty well nationally, so I was able to go to Trinity University to play tennis there in San Antonio. And at that time, Trinity was a Division I tennis school, and hopefully if folks on the line are as old as I am, they'll remember Trinity. But we had a great team and did very well. And after Trinity, unfortunately, my senior year in nationals, I had a knee injury, and I had been playing as an amateur on the tour and ranked about 70 in the world, but had to take about a year and a half off because of that knee injury. So I turned pro right after that and kind of started just kind of the future circuit and worked my way up. And I played, ended up playing 11 years, and got back to in the 60s in singles and doubles, and I retired in about in 1994. So, and now I have two boys, and my oldest is 11, and a big tennis player. So back into tennis, full with both feet, I guess you can put it that way. And so it's been a great journey, and hopefully I can share some things that I've learned, although he's very new in his career, but certainly for the last couple of years, been an eye-opening experience for both of us.
Sure, and we just have to point out that your son, Layton, won Little Mo Nationals this year, so that was a huge accomplishment for him.
He did. Thank you very much. He did. It was. I will tell you that if anybody that's not been involved in Little Mo or if you don't know much about it, please look into it because it's the Little Mo Nationals are here. I live in Austin now and are here in Austin, and we saw it last year, and it's such an unbelievably great event for the kids from between the ages of 8 and 11. And he saw that event and said, I really want to do that. And so we did sectionals and regionals, and he was very fortunate to make nationals and played very well. So it is one of those things. It's probably the highlight of his tennis career, certainly to date. And it was a really, really good experience.
That's awesome. And I know my son actually played our regional Little Mo when he was 11. Didn't get out of the regionals, but it was fun. And he, you know, also had a great experience. It was held here in Atlanta, so it was kind of a no-brainer for us. But
right.
I do know I've talked to several parents whose children have gone through the Little Mo circuit, and I've not heard one thing that hasn't been just glowing about the whole process. So I'm with Louise. I say if your child is between the ages of 8 and 11 and you're looking for an incredible tennis experience for them, definitely check out the Little Mo program. And
absolutely.
They now have an international. They now have an
they
international.
They do. They do.
Right?
They have a couple international events during the year that, you know, that I think that do get, it truly is international. I think they get a lot of folks that are outside the U.S. And it really emphasizes the things that I think are so important in tennis. And you give gifts to each other, the people that are out of your state. You know, for Little Mo Nationals, that you gave he played a kid from California first round, and they exchange gifts and they get sportsmanship tokens, and it's just the whole program, again, is just fantastic for the kids. So I, again, highly, highly encourage anybody to look at it, even as young as 8 years old. They're holding events. So.
And they are on full court still with yellow balls, am I correct?
They are, yes. Very different than kind of what the USTA is doing. And, gosh, the 8 and 8s that I saw, the boys and girls, it was incredible tennis. So, yes, absolutely, it's full court tennis there.
So, very interesting. So, Louise, talk a little bit about your experience as a junior player and how that's different from what you're seeing now with Layton's tennis.
You know, that's a great question, because I have sure thought a lot about that, because, you know, first of all, seeing it, you know, from a boy's perspective is very different than a girl's perspective and what I went through. I think just from, you know, how the kids mature and the level of tennis and strengths and all of that. So, but I will tell you, and, you know, I think that the level of tennis when I was playing certainly in the Southerns and was very, very good. But, you know, the region that we're in here in Texas, I have been just absolutely amazed the level of tennis that these kids are playing at such a young age. And I know clearly technology is part of that, but just how good these kids are has just, I just can't believe it, and how many good players there are. So I certainly think they're a lot better earlier than I certainly grew up. I didn't really actually start playing until I was about 12 or 13, so I was a little bit late coming into tennis. So, but a lot of these kids certainly my son has been playing against, played 3, 4, 5 years already, so they're very, they know their way around the tennis court for sure. So that's one big difference. The other difference is that I don't really remember growing up parental involvement as heavy, I guess, from a player to player perspective as I see in my son Layton's. Everybody's got kind of almost, and not traveling with a coach, but your coach is always there for most of the big events, and I remember some of that growing up, but I don't remember that being as sophisticated, organized, I guess, when I was growing up as well. So that's been a big difference, and I will tell you the biggest positive that I have seen is, and I can talk a little bit more later if you'd like about the tennis program that I chose for my son and why I did it, but the preventative, the exercising and the stretching, and there's a whole program around preventative injuries. Injury was a big part of my career and basically changed the trajectory of my career, and I would have given anything to be able to have, access to what they have today on, what you're doing to prevent injuries, instead of just, of course, everybody's pretty good at after the fact you're getting injured and how you handle that, but it's the attention being paid to, to make sure that their bodies as they grow are in good shape so they're not going to get injured. We just didn't have that at all, certainly. And so, just off the top of my head, those are kind of the differences that I see, from certainly when I was playing. And I know I'm going to age myself a bit here, but I started playing with a wooden racket and switched, when I was 18 or 19 to a graphite racket when they first came out. And so that's a big difference in just power and the ability to the technique, the rackets that they have today are amazing, the technology. So that's huge. And I know I sound old saying that, but it makes a huge difference, that you're allowing kids that are younger to be able to play tennis with the technology. It's not so hard to lug a big wooden racket around that you have to be pretty strong even just to swing a racket. So, but those are the off the top of my head differences that I've seen, both positive and negative.
And, you talk about the parental involvement and the coach involvement, and I grew up playing junior tennis, not anywhere close to the level that you were at, but, when I was a kid, basically the way my days went was I would go to school, I would come home, I would get my homework done, and then I'd hop on my bike and I'd ride down to the tennis courts and see who was there. And we did have we had a program called Junior Development with a coach, but basically, the kids just jumped on courts and started playing sets. It was very loosey-goosey in terms of, there weren't adults out there supervising us every step of the way. It was really left up to us to find somebody to hit with, and, you would just hang out until somebody else showed up that you could hit with.
Right.
Now, it's not like that at all. And I used to kind of chalk it up to, society's different and our kids are little and we don't want them just hanging out somewhere without adult supervision. But, my tennis player is 16 now and driving, and it's still not really that way for him, even though
right.
he's completely autonomous. He will call up buddies, if there's a weekend where he's not playing a tournament, he'll find somebody to play a practice match with. But it's not just showing up at the club where he trains and hoping there's somebody out there to hit with. It's all very premeditated now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You described my day exactly.
Yeah,
the way you described yours, that's exactly right. So.
And to me, it's kind of sad. I feel like our kids are missing out a bit on, that independence. And again, I know, we live in a very different world, but You know, sometimes I just feel like it's a shame for them that they're not getting to experience that type of atmosphere. And, you know, you figured out who you could beat and who you couldn't beat, and you worked harder to beat the ones you couldn't beat, and then you all, you know, sat down and ate French fries together until you were ready to go back on the court again. I mean,
exactly.
It was just, you know, a very different world. And I know I hear coaches and I hear other parents talk about, you know, the dreaded tennis parent and how helicoptery we've become. But I think it's just, you know, it's a sign of the times we live in, sadly.
Right. Well, yeah, I think it's a great point, too, because, you know, my son's probably two or three times ever called somebody and gone to heck because everything is so structured. But I agree with you. I think when we were, you know, when we were both growing up, I mean, you're playing tennis because you really, really want to. And you had to, you know, go out to the public facility and, like you were saying, just grab, you know, and try to organize games. And you really had to work for it because you really, really wanted to do it. It's pretty easy today for kids just to show up and everything's done for them. And then it kind of gets weeded out a little bit later. And I think their junior careers, if they really like to play or not, you know, because usually I think you'd weed out pretty a lot earlier than you would nowadays, just because everything's kind of set out for them. So I completely agree with that. There's a little nostalgia in that for sure that you miss out on that interaction and that spontaneity.
Well, you mentioned that the process that you went through to choose a program for your son. Let's talk about that, because that's a big issue, especially for families that are new to the sport.
Mm-hmm.
How do you choose a coach? How do you figure out where to take your kid? And, you know, I've written several blog posts on the topic, but it's always good to hear somebody's personal experience.
Sure. Well, I will tell you, first and foremost, I did not even ever consider coaching my son. And I'm not, number one, I don't feel like that I'm qualified from a technique perspective. I might be in some other areas, but I will tell you, in my, you know, playing tennis for 20 plus years, I honestly, it's very, very rare for that to work. So I can go on for days on that subject. But so that didn't even enter into the picture when I was deciding where I wanted him to go. I need to be his parent and support him as he goes along, and he needs to have other folks handle the rest of it. So, you know, I looked at a lot of programs here in Austin and the surrounding areas, and the number one, and I'm going to sound real old school here, but the number one criteria for me is I wanted a program where he was not a number, and that people actually cared about the kids, that they took the time to get to know them and really, you know, really cared about them. It was a small enough program that it was handled that way, and not just there's, you know, 60 kids on a court, you know, in a court, and, you know, just you're kind of a number, and you know, you're, hey, Western forehand, go over here. So that was a big one for me, because I was very fortunate in my career to have coaches that really cared about me and my success, and you know, would never have done it without them, and they to this day still very close to all of them. And so I wanted Leighton, my son is Leighton, to make sure that he had that same experience no matter how long he plays tennis. So that was the biggest thing. And then, you know, of course, to make sure that they were, you know, very good coaches and we're going to coach the right way. And I don't mean just technically. I mean, you know, how do they conduct the practices? Do they let the kids get away with banging rackets and, you know, bad behavior and that? Because that is not even an option. So it was just, you know, how they run the practices, the integrity of the program, the size of the program. But at the end of the day, the coach that you ultimately picked, do they really care about your kid? And are they going to help make good choices for your child? Do they know how to handle the child when they lose and when they win? By the way, you learn a lot on both situations. So those were my criteria, and I was very lucky enough to find a great program here in Austin that met that for me. And I just, you know, I looked at a lot of different options, but this one, those are the most important things for me.
Well, so, I mean, you list very specific things, qualities you were looking for. how did you determine that the program was going to fulfill those for you? Were there questions you asked? Did you go and watch drills? How did you come to that decision?
So, you know, I did my homework and found out, you know, kind of the major places. And I'll be honest, I went out and watched when no one, you know, knew. I didn't announce that I was coming. I just went out and watched how they conducted the practices, who ran them, you know, how they treated the kids, and, you know, for 1 or 2 days. And you know, just got a good feel for, you know, who was running it and how they conducted those practices. So that was kind of to narrow the list down for me. So kind of started out with, you know, 6 or 7 choices and then narrow it down to 2 or 3. And then I did, you know, I did one-on-ones with the people that ran the programs and asked, you know, very specific questions, as, you know, I was alluding to before, you know, about how big's the program, you know, and how you run practices and, you know, what is the criteria for the kids that you let into the program. And when if the answer is we'll let anybody that, you know, ends up paying us money, you know, that's probably a red flag for me. So but you know, I really, it's a hands-on process, and you know, I think even in a couple situations we did a week-long camp there, so I was able to see him in action and how they did those things before we made a decision. But yeah, it's an important decision. But I will tell you, another criteria that I probably should have mentioned before was the other kids that are in the program. You know, what are their reputations? Forget where they're ranked, you know, all of that, because you're assuming that everybody's good and that want to get better. But, you know, what is the reputation of those kids? Does that program win a lot of the sportsmanship awards? And other, you know, do they value that? You know, so there's things like, as because you know, he's going to mold himself after older kids that he's going to see. So what type of kids do they have in the program, and is that something that you're comfortable with, you know, your son, you know, looking up to? So all of that, but it's a hands-on, absolute process, and you know, and I encourage everybody to you know, you get the same rigor that you would do, you know, any sort of job interview, or because it's a commitment, and they're going to spend a lot of time with those folks. So it's a non-trivial decision. There's no doubt about it, and you got to put the rigor around it.
You mentioned sportsmanship awards. Is that a common occurrence in Texas tournaments? Do they do sportsmanship awards a lot there?
They do in the bigger tournaments. They do, and you know, the club that Layton it goes to in the academy, it's called Advantage Doyle here in Austin. And we just won, one of the girls and one of the boys just won the in 16s and 18s, the Sportsmanship Award in the last tournament, and they made a really big deal about it, as they should. You know, a tournament director came up to the coaches that were there and said, you know, your kids, they learn the right way, and they just act so, you know, they're great sports on the court, and all the younger kids see that. So absolutely, I think I assume by your question that they do not do that anymore in the South, and that would be a big shame if they don't do that, because I think that's as important as winning the tournament. Is those awards, that's a big deal.
Well, it's interesting. They do the sportsmanship awards at some tournaments, not all of them.
Okay.
But when they do them here in the South, a lot of times the sportsmanship award is voted on by the players. And so what tends to happen is a group of kids gets together and decides who they want to win the sportsmanship award that weekend, and they, you know, stuff the ballot box. So it's not truly a sportsmanship award as you're describing it.
Right.
We do have tournaments where the tournament director is making that determination, for sure. So I don't want to say that we don't have them at all, but a lot of times it is the kids voting, and we all know how that can play out.
Right, right,
so,
yeah. No, I don't think we don't do the ballot box stuffing here. I think that's the tournament director and the tournament team.
Well, it, you know, it devalues the process and devalues the award, for sure.
It does.
And so it becomes kind of a joke, and that's a shame, and I think that's definitely a problem we see a lot, especially on the boys' side.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's as bad on the girl's side, but I know I have a child with a very foul mouth, and he works very hard to control it, but it's not always successful, and, you know, it's been an ongoing process for him to learn, mm-hmm. because he was in a program, honestly, where that stuff was tolerated. It just, it was tolerated, and I didn't know any better, and that's, it kind of brings me back to a point you made about doing the due diligence and all of that. You know, you had experience as a player, as a junior player, as a collegiate, a professional player with tennis, with, I'm assuming, several different coaches over your career, being around lots and lots of different players who had come from lots and lots of different environments. And so I think you probably had a pretty good point of reference when looking for a program for your child. But for parents who don't have that frame of reference, who either never played tennis before or, you know, never played any sport before, or somebody like me who, yeah, I played, but, you know, I played at a much lower level. And honestly, when my parents were choosing a program for me, it was the program that was, you know, three blocks away and I could ride my bike. So that was the determining factor, and there weren't a ton of choices back then. So for me, it was one of those things that I asked a couple people that I knew had kids playing tournaments, and I got the same recommendation from a few different people, and so that's where we went. Mm-hmm. And it ended up, from a technical side, ended up being a great choice. My son got beautiful technique.
Which is important.
It is important. The coaches knew how to teach him how to play tennis. But the other pieces definitely were lacking. And I have seen, actually, in the little over a year since, well, by the time this show airs, I guess it'll be almost a year and a half since he's changed coaching situations, that those other factors have definitely come in, and it's very different. It is very different. And so I would say, you know, to parents listening to the show, Louise is giving awesome advice here, and for those of you just starting out looking for a program for your child, the criteria that she used are great criteria to start with, and you know, the more you can do in terms of actually watching, and I love what you said about the reputation of the other kids in the program. That's such a great point. It's not about who is ranked number one and, you know, how what national tournaments they play, but really the type of people that are there.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I think that's a key point, and I hope our listeners will pick up on that. And another point I wanted to kind of elaborate on with you has to do with the coaching environment and the type of training that goes on. So you said one of the things that you were so impressed with being back in the junior tennis world is all the fitness training and nutrition training that these kids are receiving, injury prevention and all of that. So when you're looking for a program, though, you know, is that a factor in what you were looking for, or was it just kind of a, oh, my gosh, this exists now, how lucky for my child?
Right, and if I had been smarter, I would have asked questions around that, but I would, the advice I would give now is absolutely ask that question, because you're right, I kind of backed into it, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, they do all of this stuff, that's really cool. But it absolutely is so important now that I've really understood, I understand a lot better now about, you know, everything that they're doing, and there's a whole methodology around it, and it makes complete sense. I just, honestly, when I was going through I didn't even think to ask that question, but that is a very key question. You know, what are they doing fitness-wise, training on and off the court? You know, what are the fitness goals? You know, what's that whole program? And if they say we don't have one, then that's probably, that would be a red flag to me, because I think the better programs now will at least say, well, we work with these people and that kind of thing, have some sort of answers there, even better if it's part of the program. But you're exactly right. That's a a key criteria to, because the kids are going to, I mean, if they play intense tennis, they're going to get injured, you know, and how do you handle, how should that work, or do you have to do that all on your own, and, you know, and how do I know if my son's growing 7 inches in a year and a half, and so what do I need to be aware of, and what does he need to work on based on that? So mm-hmm. you've got to at least have, if you don't have it in your tennis program, you need to have at least a support system, you know, sports clinic or whatever it happens to be that you can certainly be available and very comfortable with to augment the program. But I think the better programs nowadays certainly have that associated with right within the program.
Sure. Okay, so that begs the question. How old was Layton when you went through this process of finding the program for him?
He was 10. He had just turned 10.
Okay, but he had been playing already for a bit, or?
He had been playing for about 6 months. He's a really good athlete, and he picked up tennis really quickly, so he got to a certain level pretty quickly, so that it became very obvious that that's what he wanted to do along with his other sports he was playing at the time. And so I just knew that it kind of passed my hitting with me that he was going to get any better, and that's when we started researching, is he too young? My first question was, is he too young? And so I went out in search of that answer too. Maybe he's too young and needs to wait, you know, till he gets a little bit older. So I had to do my research on that, and some programs he is too young to do. But you got to, again, how much tennis does an 11 or 12 year old need to play, and you got to get comfortable with those answers. But that's when I started looking and looked for an afternoon type program and then kind of work our way into something more maybe later. But that's the way mm-hmm. it started.
Well, because the reason I'm asking this is, for example, with my son, he started just taking a half hour lesson once a week in the neighborhood when he was probably 5 or 6 years old,
mm-hmm.
a neighbor organized a coach to come to the neighborhood and teach the little kids for a half an hour once a week. And,
right.
and that was it. I mean, that
mm-hmm.
was what he did. The summer that he turned, well, and let me back up a little bit. When he was 8 years old, another neighbor, tennis is huge in Atlanta, and there's
yeah.
tons of league tennis, and
uh-huh.
there are tons of opportunities for juniors to play on league teams and all of that. So a neighbor organized a neighborhood boys tennis team to play in our local league, and my son joined that team. And, again, they had a half an hour lesson once a week, or maybe it was an hour at that point with the group. And then they played a match once a week, and that
mm-hmm.
was the extent of his tennis.
Mm-hmm.
And then at age 9, he was asked by a friend to go to tennis camp for a week at the University of Georgia, and that was the turning point for him. So
mm-hmm.
he was 9, he was actually almost 10. He was turning 10 soon after that, and came back from that camp experience saying, I want to start playing tennis tournaments.
Hmm.
And, at that point I'm like, well, I don't think you can play tennis tournaments when you take one half hour lesson a week. I just don't think you have the skill and fitness level and ability. And so for us, that was the point at which it was time to look for something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a lot of parents, they start their kids in tennis sort of like I did. It was,
mm-hmm.
It's just one more activity to add to the list. And, on Mondays we do baseball, on Tuesdays
right.
we do gymnastics, and on Wednesdays we do tennis.
That's and exactly right, yep.
So, I think one of the big challenges as a parent is recognizing when it's time to step it up.
Right.
And, what are the signs? So for you, what were the signs that Layton showed you that you knew that hitting with you, you said he outgrew hitting with you, but what did that mean for you, and specifically what changed?
So, Layton has a very similar story to your son where he started playing just in our name. And I should say this, and everybody's shocked when I say this, Layton really did not and still really doesn't understand the degree in which I played tennis and all of that. The older he's getting, certainly he's understanding it, but it just wasn't something we talked about in the household, and it was just, it was just kind of in the past, and I certainly didn't want to influence either one of my kids to play tennis or not. So just so because that's the first thing people ask, what do you mean you didn't know you didn't play tennis and extend and, you know, all that stuff. But anyway, so it just started out, he played all the sports, and he did very similar things to what your son did, and he played. We're very fortunate to live in a neighborhood, sounds like, you know, where Atlanta is, that there's a lot of tennis, kind of recreation tennis. Well, he got on one of those league teams, and the minute he started playing matches, he was hooked and wanted to play more and more and more, and you know, had friends that were involved in the tennis and said, well, here's what you have to do. And so the minute that started, and he pushed me to play, well, I want to play today, I want to play today, and that's when he started wanting to play more and more, that I knew that, you know, that he kind of outgrown where, you know, what he was currently doing and needed to. And I'm a firm believer in, I mean, I think getting tennis lessons is very important, clearly, but playing matches with kids your own age and playing, you know, playing sets and doing sets and a good mix of sets and drilling is the way to go. And that's certainly something he couldn't get with me. And so that's when I knew personally. But I think your kid's going to tell you, especially if they get the bug that, you know, they want to keep playing tournaments and they play a few tournaments and they really like it, they're going to tell you and push you more to do it. So I think, you know, and every kid's different, but I think our stories are very similar in that, you know, we got that indication that he wanted to do something more than that, and that's when, you know, I really started looking. So.
It's so funny. I mean, the more parents you talk to, the more you realize we really do all kind of travel down a similar path. I mean, there's subtle differences here and there, but, you know, one of the reasons I started writing my blog and doing this show is because I just kept feeling so confused over the best way to go about things. And
right.
There are multiple paths, for sure. I mean, and
yeah.
Every kid is different, and every family situation is different and all that. But the basic part is all the same. They've got
yeah.
to have the – they've got to want it themselves.
Yep.
It can't be parent-driven. It's got to be kid-driven. And they've got to have solid instruction from an early age to get that solid technical background before they can move on. And
absolutely.
And, you know – the onus is on us as parents to provide that for them or find a way to provide it for them. But then we really have to step back and let them drive the train and, you know, tell us where they want to take this.
That's exactly right. And I
find it so interesting that Layton doesn't really have a clear understanding. How old's your other son, by the way?
Nine.
Okay. So
yeah.
Is he playing yet?
He's playing a little bit. He's playing in kind of the same thing where Layton started, but he's nowhere near as competitive as Layton. So he likes all different kind of sports. So it'll be interesting to see what path he wants to take. But Layton, the minute he started playing tennis and the tournaments, that was the end of that. So
they're so different. But
yeah.
I just find it so interesting and. Again, you know, I didn't grow up with the background that you had, but that your sons really don't know how awesome their mom is. And, you know, in terms of her tennis, I'm sure they know how awesome you are in other areas. But was that a conscious decision on your part to keep that in the background and kind of see where they wanted to go? Or, you know,
it really was, honestly, because, you know, I want him to have his own journey. You know, I don't want him to feel pressure to do it or not to do it just because I did it. And, you know, and I don't want his success to be compared to anything that I did. And I tell him this all the time. I said, you know, you can't even compare yourself to other kids. You're on your own journey. Your body's going to mature at the level, and, you know, you're mentally, physically, all of that, and you're going to run your own race. And, you know, you have to enjoy the wins that you have as much as he likes to beat himself up. He's very, very hard on himself when he loses. That my job as a parent, as a tennis parent in my mind, is, you know, when he gets a good win, that he needs to enjoy that. And I need to point that out to him, that we need to enjoy the wins as much as you beat yourself up over the losses. And that's him beating himself up. That's not me. I am there as a support system because I know he's going to do that to himself. But I'm, you know, I think it's just really important that they realize that, you know, the journey's their own, and they're going to run the race differently. Everybody is, and playing tennis is all about the life lessons that you learn from it, and that's why it's a lifelong sport, and I love it so much, and it's been so much fun for me to, because I actually just quit tennis for, and just, I shouldn't say quit, but I retired, and then I moved on in my career and did something completely different, and kind of forged another path, and kind of left tennis a little bit behind, and, you know, not, it just was just, that was the, you know, where my life was at that point. And then, but now having gotten back into it, I realize how much I love it and actually missed it. And it's just so much fun to see the joy in my son's eyes when he's playing, because, you know, the way that I certainly feel about tennis, but it's fun to watch him go through the journey. So again, I want him to own his journey and not to have to live up to anything I did or didn't do or any sort of comparisons, because that's just not fair. And so that, when he started playing sports in general, I wanted him to feel like they have their own successes. So
that's awesome. I mean, it's wonderful that you realize that and that, you know, you were thoughtful enough to realize that your kids do need to forge their own way and not be in anybody's shadow.
Absolutely.
I have so much respect for that. So, you know, kudos to you. That's wonderful. I mean, seriously, it's tough. You know, parenting is so hard, and you know, you're not to the teenage years yet, but you're getting awfully close.
Oh yeah. And, oh yeah.
I mean, there are times where, you know, your kids challenge you to your outermost limits, and
mm-hmm.
You know, it's in those moments that I think we tend to, well, I won't speak for anybody but me, but I tend to fall back on, well, do you realize what I did? You know,
yeah,
blah,
yeah,
blah, blah,
exactly.
Blah, and
yeah.
I have to stop myself and, you know, it's, you hope that your kids at some point will learn to appreciate all of that. But as they're growing up, you just want to provide them with, like you said, the loving environment and the safe place to experience the wins and the losses and come out the other end a solid human being. So
right, absolutely.
It's tough. It is really tough.
You said something that just that we talk a lot about in our household, and that's being grateful. Because I will tell you, the program that Leighton's in, I'm just so grateful for everybody that he's around, and the kids and the coaches and the school, all of it together, and I say this to Leighton all the time, that I want him to be grateful and understand what he has, because I would have given anything to have that situation when I was growing up. And, you know, it kind of becomes normal for them. And so I think that is so important that they realize they have the opportunity to do this, and it is pretty special on, you know, just to be able to play the sport and to travel, you know, around it and be able to do this to whatever capacity that is. That is just so important that the kids understand that. And, you know, one of the things that I think is just such a plus for some of the programs that I have seen, that, you know, they work, the kids get to be volunteer to other tennis centers around Austin and go help, you know, maybe some underprivileged kids that don't have the opportunities that our kids have. So they do see that what they have is pretty special, and they have that opportunity. I really believe that that is so important, that they, instead of just kind of forging, because tennis is a selfish kind of sport. You're thinking, believe me, you're just thinking about yourself all the, you know, all the time, and what kind of shape I'm in and when I need to practice, and it can get pretty tunnel vision. And I think, and you know, I wish I had been taught that more when I was growing up, that you got to look at the bigger picture here. You're pretty lucky to do what you do and to get that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important. I think, you know, whether how much you can be a mentor at 11 or, you know, but just to be able to be exposed to, hey, you know, I'm pretty lucky to have what I have and other kids, and let's try to help them too, is important. And a lot of programs are starting to do that. I know certainly in Austin they're doing that, and they do a great job. And I give Andy Roddick a lot of credit. I mean, he's certainly, he lives here in Austin, and I know you're a big fan of his as well. And he's been such a great thing for this community and for tennis in general. But to have him here and what he's doing here in Austin, that resonates with the kids. It really, really does. And then and Ryan Harrison was here as well for a while. He was working with Grant Dole, who runs my son's program. And he was so great with the kids. So just to have that type of, you know, environment for the kids to see the nice, good role models and doing it the right way and starting the foundation when he did and all of that is really, really important. So.
And that's it's awesome. Ryan's actually like, from my same hometown in Louisiana, and he was in. He and his brother were in Louisiana this past weekend doing an event for the Wounded Warrior Project. Which, you know, if people aren't familiar with that, Google it. It's a really awesome effort, and I love seeing the young players give back like that. I agree with
Absolutely.
You. I think it's huge. So. Let me just ask you, as a tennis parent, are there things that you can take from your childhood tennis experience and your experience with your parents and use them now in your life as a tennis mom?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I was fortunate. I had, you know, athletic parents and they didn't have to push me at all. So I certainly learned from great role models there that, as you mentioned before, your kids have to be the one that really want to do it. Because I sure saw the other side of that where other, you know, parents that kids I played against did not do it the right way. And so you see both sides of that. So I have tried, I try really, really hard. I stay in the background and let, you know, Leighton do his thing and support where necessary. But, you know, The biggest thing that I've learned is, as I mentioned a little bit before, I used to beat myself up when I lost, and that's the only thing I ever remembered was when I would lose, and I remember some of the wins. So I tried to really get him to realize that you've got to reward yourself when you have a great win, and even when you lose, it might be you played a great match, and see the positives from that as well and learn from both winning and losing. I think that's the main thing. But, you know, to support your child and let them run their own journey, again, run their own race like my parents did for me was absolutely what I wanted to emulate. And like I said before, not coaching your child and not being so involved that's all you can talk about and that, you know, and certainly when it gets into a higher level, I can't imagine me quitting my job and putting that type of pressure on my son to support the family or whatever it would happen to be. So, so I've certainly learned things not to do, but you know, just to be a parent and understand that to be the support system that he needs and not get involved. I will tell you honestly, a lot of the tennis players don't even know that I played. So if they ever listen to this, they'd be very surprised. But I just like any other tennis parent and just try to support him any way I can. But he does have the advantage I can go hit with him and do some of that and warm up. So there is some advantages to that too. But that's the biggest lesson, honestly, is, you know, just let the coaches, pick the right coaches, let the coaches do their thing and be the parent and support him. But have him be, you know, appreciate the good wins, but and learn from the losses as much as you can, and move on, and it's just a match, and you'll have another one, and move on. So that's how I try to conduct the way we're doing things now, and hopefully as he gets older, I know it might be a little bit more challenging, as you mentioned, but I think setting that good foundation is really important, and hopefully that'll bode well for him when I'm not there and when I don't travel with him and that he'll do the right things on his own. So,
It sounds like you're giving him a great base and I'm sure he will do you proud as his,
I hope
he
so.
Goes through this whole thing. So I have a question you can choose to answer or not, but I'm just curious, when he comes off the court after a tough match and a tough loss, what's the conversation like between you guys? What happens? I mean, walk us through. He's just come off the court. He's, you know, lost the match, and the opponent's going in to report the score, and, you know, he's coming off the court head hung, I would assume.
Yeah.
Head hung low.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, he is still 11, and we still have quite a few tears some of the times when he loses because he's so disappointed and very competitive that he wants to win every time, and it doesn't matter if he's playing the number one kid in Texas or whatever it happens to be, he wants to win. So there's a lot of disappointment. Honestly, I when he walks off the court, walk him a little bit, you know, away from the court and just hug him because he needs to be upset for a little bit and just let him talk. And, you know, I kind of just try to listen. I don't really try to commentate on anything unless he would ask me a very specific question because it's just not the time or place. He's upset and, you know, just tell him that he played well or whatever the positives that I could say were. But there's no talking about it at that point. I just don't think that's productive. And a lot of times I'll just comfort him. And if his coach is there, one of the coaches from where he goes and where he trains is there, I let them talk to him because usually he can – there's a little bit more, I guess, you know, then the emotions aren't quite as high when he's talking to the coach. So they more talk to him about, well, you know, the kid did this really well or, you know, kind of a little bit talk to him kind of high level there. So I let them do that. And then we'll talk about it later, but I'm really just a shoulder to cry on, you know, when he went right now. Now, I think that certainly he's not going to cry after every match when he gets a little bit older. And he's getting a little bit out of that now, but that's my job right now, the way I look at it. And just trying to, and you know, an hour or two later, he's okay. But he beats himself up really badly when he loses. So I'm really there to try to minimize that as much as possible because it's usually the kid plays, you know, too well that day, and that's what I want him to realize that. The minute they realize that, hey, I lost, I played really well, kid was just too good. That's a big breakthrough in my mind, and he's still too young to – he'll admit it maybe 2 or 3 hours later, but right when it's over, the emotions are raw. And yeah, there's no – I just don't think it does any – I hated that when anybody did that to me when after I lost. I don't need to critique everything I didn't do well then. So I just, you know, I think, you know, let it rest 2 or 3 hours, and then, you know, if he wants to talk about it later, we can sure do that. And they do a really good thing at – where he goes, that they you write down, you know, for each tournament and what they did well and what they need to work on and each match and all that kind of stuff. So he can be more methodical about going through it at a later date, you know, at a later time. But for right now, for an 11-year-old, I think that's and for his personality, certainly, that's the way to go.
And so did your parents watch your tennis matches when you were growing up?
My mom watched about, you know, most of all the matches that I played and a lot of my key college matches. So she said, you know, this is payback for you for all the nervousness that she had that she's watching me do it. So it's kind of funny as everything goes full circle here, but she did. And my dad did is not as much because he was working, but yes, they were especially my mom saw about every. Certainly in juniors that I played, and so yeah, they're very supportive there. And she did the same thing. I mean, you kind of live what your parents did, I think, in a certain degree. But she kind of left me alone after I lost to give me a little bit of time, and I think that works really well.
I think that's one of the hardest things to do as a parent, and
yes.
And probably the most important thing we should be doing as parents.
Agree.
Is, you know, just giving them a hug, and that's
yep.
it. I mean, providing that safe haven for them
to get
the emotion out. Yep. Yeah,
resist
tough.
The temptation when you get in the car to do the, well, you know, that forehand cross court or whatever. I mean, resist that temptation because it really is, it's not helpful, and they're not going to remember it, and it's just, yeah, it's not helpful to do it at that point.
No.
Sure.
And it's a message that several of my radio show guests have, you know, said the same thing. Sports psychologists and mental toughness coaches, you know, are all telling us the same thing. As parents, I'm not sure why it's so hard for us.
Yeah.
But it is.
Yeah.
It's really
I
difficult.
Know.
And I found, and I don't know if you have this experience too, but, you know, the older my child gets, the easier it is for me to let go. The hardest thing for me has been kind of trusting him to take care of his tennis stuff. And
yeah.
as the mom of an 11-year-old, I'm not sure, you know, how much you can let go yet, but it really does them no good when we do everything for them and
yep.
and teaching them how to prepare and, you know, trusting that they have the knowledge and that they're either going to do it and realize how important it is, or they're not going to do it and they're going to realize, oops, I should have done it, and learn the lesson next time. But I don't know, you know, how do y'all go about that stuff? I mean, do you fix the water bottle and remind them to pack the snacks? And, I mean, at 11, I would assume yes, but...
Yeah, that's so funny you bring this up, because I have sure thought about this a lot, because, yeah, I pretty much do everything at 11 just because, well, he's 11 just because he's so focused, you know, on you know, the match itself, and he'd forget a shoe or there's no telling. And, you know, there's, you know, make sure you have a hat because it's 110 degrees here in Texas, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We do talk a lot about that in my house, about taking care of your stuff and knowing what to do and all that. But it's so funny you bring that up, because I absolutely, you know, I need to prepare him for that day where, you know that there's going to be times where he's not going to want, you know, he's going to outgrow that and he needs to go with coaches or friends or whatever it happens to be. So I think we're a couple years off, but it's so interesting you bring that up, because I think that's really important that you do that. And I think, because it's got to be their journey, and they got to be able to do it themselves, and you're just there to make sure they have the background and they can do it themselves. So, and that's part of it, and not leaving your rockets in the car or the hotel or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, self-reliance is one of those life lessons that our tennis kids learn. And I just read a really great article. I think I posted it, a link to it on the blog too. I know it's on our Facebook page. But the importance of these kids becoming self-reliant at an early age, and how it helps them actually perform better on the tennis court. Because the theory is that, you know, when you travel to a tournament, if you let them figure out the route you're going to take, for instance, you know, what highway you need to take and what exit you need to get off, it teaches them how to plan ahead and how to analyze a situation, which planning ahead and analyzing in the moment are huge factors on the tennis court, right?
Absolutely. No doubt about it.
Training their brain to do those types of things. And I mean, to me, when I read the article, I said, oh my God, I have done my child such a disservice all these years, and I need to just back off. And
it's a motherly instinct too. It's hard not to do that. It really is, but it makes a ton of sense, doesn't it? So, well, you keep writing about that, because I need to follow that and learn that as he gets older.
We'll all remind each other. I mean, I honestly, you know, the community is so important, and I've written a lot about that too, and it sounds like you had the same or similar experience that I had in terms of, you know, the community you built around yourself through tennis, and, you know, the community that you want to see your son build around himself as a tennis player, and our kids' community becomes our community. And
I
think it's such a valuable way to grow up and a valuable way to live life, and learning how to integrate with other people who have similar interests but maybe from different backgrounds or,
exactly.
You know, it's so great. Well, we're coming down to the end of our hour. I told you it was going to go quickly.
It did go quick, yeah.
We're down to our last 2 minutes. And I really just want to give you the opportunity to share any other information that you feel is important for tennis parents to hear, whether it's your personal experience as a player or your experience as a parent.
Well, thank you very much for having me. This has been really fun. Just to get this last thought in, but, you know, I'm kind of just starting this tennis parent journey, and I've learned a lot over the last year, just, you know, what not to do, and certainly I don't have it all down yet. But, you know, the best advice I can give is you know your child best, and you're going to hear lots of advice from lots of different people, and at the end of the day, you make the decisions that you think are right for your child, and not just, you know, it might be putting him in a situation where he might be the best or might not be. But, I mean, you got to use your instincts as parents and not get caught up in rankings and all of that stuff. Just put them in a good situation and, you know, make sure all of those things we talked about earlier are there, because that is the most important thing at the end of the day. But your instincts as a parent are the most important thing, and you'll know the right thing to do as you go along. We'll all learn together, and because I certainly don't have all the answers, but I think it's a great journey, and I'm just so thrilled that he enjoys tennis, and hopefully he'll play for a lifetime. So
I love it.